Here on Reality Check Radio, it's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Oh, government annoys us. Nothing compared to what local councils, how much they annoy us. They drive us bats because they're sort of all over us in our lives and we get the rates bill. Got a gentleman here. He's got some answers, not just complaints. Andrew Bidder. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Rodney. And if I can start with a big thank you to RCR for leading the fight against wokeism, a big thank you to RCR listeners for staying informed, and a big thank you to you personally for all you've done to fight bureaucracy over the decades.
Oh, how unsuccessfully though. I loved Elon Musk sending out an email to every civil servant in America. Let us know in bullet point form the five things you accomplished last week and copy the answer to your manager. If you don't reply, we'll take that as a resignation.
Fantastic, because
It's
the
a
staff are
funny
part of the
thing because
resistance.
why wouldn't we do that to every civil servant in New Zealand?
They resist our attempts to try and fix the bureaucracy, and they do it out of self-interest, of course. So yes, they are very much part of the problem, and we need to admit that and deal with it.
Tell me, Andrew, how did you get into looking at councils?
Right. I've had 30 years of experience in the construction industry as an architect, property developer, project manager. I get stuff done. I get it built, I get it done on budget and on time. And over that 30 years, the council bureaucracy has made it much worse. It now takes longer to get a building consent than it does to build the building.
Jeepers.
This is crippling New Zealand's productivity. And I've been fighting it for most of that 30 years, trying to get change done and being resisted at every step of the way. So I put my hand up for council. And got elected basically on my reputation as straight talking, not necessarily polite, and actually trying to fight with real solutions. And it cost me
What council is that,
$100,000 a
Andrew?
year to be on council of lost income,
How much?
$100,000 a year of lost income.
Wow.
So,
What council are you on?
Hamilton City Council.
Well, it's had a history, hasn't it?
Yes, certainly. The first thing that springs to mind was the V8 races, which were a financial disaster, and a number of other disasters along the way, which still can occur every day in small amounts. So the latest, we have a new pedestrian crossing at a cost of $550,000. Now, $200,000 of that is construction, $50,000 is traffic management, and $300,000 of overheads and admin. And I look at the $200,000 of construction, and I don't see anything other than some paint and a couple of lights. So the whole thing is just maddening.
You're sitting on the council, and something like that comes across the council's desk, and you know this is waste or worse. Are your fellow councillors resistant to you pointing this out? It's amazing, isn't it?
When you look at their backgrounds, so we have a mayor in Hamilton who was a former kindergarten teacher. Now, that might actually be appropriate to managing councillors, but it's not
Good.
really the skills needed. And when you look around the rest of the table, The lack of relevant experience really stands out because councils are fundamentally engineering companies. Two-thirds of their expenditure is on roads and waters. Half the remainder is on property of some description, whether it's building maintenance or new community halls or managing parks and gardens. And the rest is just the fluff that gets a lot of councillors excited, but they are fundamentally ignorant of three quarters of what council actually does.
And my observation of a council is like central politics. The mayor is very busy being the mayor and shaking hands and visiting retirement villages. He or she are supported in their role by the chief executive. The chief executive and the mayor form a partnership where the chief executive runs the council and looks after the mayor, and the mayor backs the chief executive 100%, and the two of them view the council as a problem, the council members as a problem, to be kept as much in the dark as they possibly can, and to manage. Most councillors are happy to be managed because they're on the council. And they'll ask questions which aren't exactly probing without follow-up and easily batted away by an accomplished bureaucrat. You have a double problem, or making it worse, is the council only has the information that the chief executive and mayor deign to give them. And there's absolutely no contestable advice. At least if you're sitting in a cabinet, you have ministers that are powered up with their own departments, and the cabinet is getting contestable advice from the different ministries. Having said that, the bureaucracy is united in the one thing that they don't want politicians running them. But on a council, the level of transparency and accountability, and therefore democracy, is next to nothing.
You are mostly right.
Yes, tell me.
The slight differences, I would actually clarify the power balance between the mayor and the chief executive by saying that in most cases, the chief executive is paid two to three times as much as the mayor.
Yes.
And that gives a bit of an indication of where the real power lies.
So the chief
And
executive runs the mayor.
that's right. The mayor supports the chief executive, not the other way around.
Not making any reference to your chief executive, but the chief executives that I've advert I was Minister of Local Government for 3 years. The chief executives that I observed, without exception, extremely mediocre. Very, very, at best, middle management, and very, very bureaucratic, and not one leader.
So,
Sort of like Mr. Luxon.
good point.
It's appalling, isn't it?
I will say that the chief executive has an impossible job. Now,
Yes,
that's no excuse.
I agree with that.
If we take Hamilton, for example, Hamilton's got 28 different business units. So these range from roads, waters, parks and gardens, the usual things that you think of in the council, right through to having a zoo, which isn't exactly core business for council. So libraries, building consents, resource consents, a total of 28 different business functions. There is simply no way that a chief executive can be competent in 28 different areas. So they are set up for failure. And as a result, they aren't Managers, they aren't leaders, they are administrators.
Yes.
They rely on their general managers. And in Hamilton, we've got half a dozen general managers at the second tier. Each of those has got half a dozen business functions, which means that they can't actually have their head around all of those. So you're down into a third tier of department heads before you actually have people who are functionally in control of what they are doing. And at that level, they are so far removed from councillors, the elected representatives of the people, and so far removed from the ratepayers, their customers, that they are pretty much untouchable. And in a number of areas, roading in particular, we're seeing that they have their own agendas that they are pushing through without question from their managers and without question from the elected councillors.
And they have their hands on the keyboards and the levers of the machinery of council.
Yes. Yes.
There's also a further complication. There's the intricacies and the boxes and arrows and the timeline of the planning process, which is a mystery to anyone other than a town planner. It was described to me by a local government observer that the planners are a third sex, that they are sort of different. And that planning process that's laid upon them and how they go about it is extremely complicated. And while it gives the pretense of consultation, is prescriptive and further adds to the power of down in the weeds of the council. Would that be fair?
It is. I was there at the start of the Resource Management Act, and I was at university studying architecture at the time. And the architecture school includes the planning school. And the only people that went into town planning were those that failed to get into the architecture school. And we shared some of the same lectures, and I saw the people that were doing it. So I'm not actually surprised at what has happened.
No.
Now, the Resource Management Act, when it started, was actually pretty good. I could do a resource consent in a matter of hours on a couple of pages. And I didn't even charge my clients for it. It was that simple because that was the way it was intended. You could do anything you wanted, so long as you didn't impact on anyone else. If you did impact on anyone else, you had to mitigate it, in some way, or at least get their permission through consultation. So make sure that there's creating no problems. Now it's a year to get a resource consent, hundreds and hundreds of pages, and I won't do it because it is simply too frustrating. So I'd simply say to my clients, look, you've got to get a planning consultant. They're all ex-council employees, and they've been incentivized to make the whole system complicated. It's a gravy train in industry now that adds no value. It's a big hurdle to overcome.
I've got a question for you. Personal one.
Yes.
I'm doing a very small development, 5 units.
Yes.
The building and the engineering is a doddle.
Yes.
Financial side, not hard. Have to get a consent. Went off and got one of your ex-council employees. And the bills just come in on a monthly basis.
Yes.
I then have to get other experts, noise control, soil testers. I then have to go off to a very distant iwi and apply for a consent off them. I have to employ a consultant to talk to them. I stopped it. It was financially draining me, and there was no progress. It's just wheels going round and round and round, and emails being sent. So I stopped it. I have thought that I should just take my plans myself and ask for a meeting with the council planner and say, I'm going to try and do this without help. I don't care how long it, I mean, I've got all day to do this, right? It's like I'd rather fix something and take 10 hours and pay someone to do it for an hour because I get a pleasure out of seeing how it works. Everyone has told me no, that I'll fail because they won't let a citizen do that. But I'm pretty determined, but I haven't started. Like they've actually, people have left me too scared even to walk into the building with my plans because I'd mess it up. What would you suggest to me?
Give up.
Sorry?
Give up.
I didn't hear what you said.
Sorry, give up.
I'll give up.
You are not going to get through. They won't let you get through. Now, legally, you are absolutely entitled to do it. And back at the start of the RMA, I would have encouraged you to do it yourself. Now, what we want as developers is to be able to go into council and say, hey, I've got half an idea to do something. Yeah, there's going to be hurdles to jump over along the way, such as the noise. That can all be dealt with by consultants throughout the process. But all I'm asking for at the moment is, will I get permission to put 5 units on the site? And can you give me an answer? Yes, no, or maybe. Because if it's a no, I can stop now and not waste any money. If it's a yes, then I'm going to be prepared to pay for all the other consultants and get on and do it. It's just some hurdles that need to be overcome and I can do it. If it's a maybe, we can talk about it a bit more and clarify what I need to do, what changes might make it a bit easier. And that's all I want, right? And you should be able to get that off no more than sketch plans. And originally, that's how council planners operated. They'll give you that yes. Now, they are not allowed to say any actual practical advice. They will simply tell you to put in an application, get all these reports, and you take the entire risk throughout the whole process before you actually start getting any feedback on whether or not you might be able to do it. And if you don't have the right consultants ticking off stuff, the council staff will not make any decision at all. And
So the advice I'm getting is correct. Use the experts, consultants.
because the council staff won't help you. They are allegedly public servants. They are not going to serve the public.
In a funny way, it creates what you'd call a huge rent
Yes.
because where I live, there's a lot of opportunities for development, but no one will do it
Yes.
unless you're one of the big guys.
Correct.
And the big guys, A, have the resources, and B, have the in.
Yes.
So if I can financially weather it and have the intestinal fortitude to go through the consultants thing, I said to my wife, if we did get it, you're going to be the only one because no one else can literally stand the process. The process. I was Minister of Local Government. I heard all the stories. I had no idea until you do it personally how horrendous it is. And this is a very, very, very simple ask. You could literally look at it and say, like you say, yes, no. You probably need to take that down a bit for the visual pollution. But I have interpreted the process as one that is designed to frustrate me, anger me, and destroy me. The process itself. And I've decided to take it like a Christian mission
Yes.
and not do any of those things. Oh, you're very encouraging because I had that in the back of my mind, and I know it's not the answer you'd like to give, but it's good advice because I couldn't, I didn't. Man, I'm a do-it-yourselfer. If I've built, I build cabins, I build stuff, I fix things. I'm as slow as a wet wig. It takes me 10 times longer than anyone else, but I enjoy it. And I get so angry that this land that I own has all these people walking over it. Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know what about this. And I will tell you maybe sometime in the future if you do this. And every time you interact, it's another thing you have to get. Starts off quite easy with the consultant. And then just got harder and harder and harder. Same project. I don't mind paying the landscape architect and the architects because they do stuff. Well, I probably shouldn't have bothered you with my personal stuff.
Is a very good example of what we're up against, and it is a major factor in the housing affordability.
Absolutely.
If you look at the cost of construction and compare it to the land price over the last 20 years, yeah, the cost of construction has gone up in line with inflation, but the land price has shot up far higher than that, and it is because of council restrictions on property development and sections coming online to be built. And that has tripled, quadrupled land prices. That's what's made it unaffordable for a whole generation.
I was shocked when I was Minister of Local Government at the number of developers that I had right through New Zealand who would be in their 50s and 60s, who'd spent most of their working life as developers, buying a bit of land on spec, applying, getting it subdivided, putting in the infrastructure, and making a subdivision. They had good years left to them, and they all said they were out.
Peace.
They said they could not do it. They had enough money to retire. And they said, there's no one else is going to pick this up because we don't mind hurdles. But this is beyond that. And now we sit there and wonder why there's a housing shortage.
Yes. In Hamilton in particular, we heard from a lot of developers during our long-term plan consultation who are all just talking about leaving Hamilton. It's got too difficult, too expensive, and they are doing that. There is a crash in the number of building consents. There is a crash in the number of section consents. And this creates a lag of 2 to 3 years. And if they come back into the market to try and get more sections,
Yes.
built. So we have house prices flatlining at the moment because immigration has dropped off. But we are going to get significant house price rises because the amount of construction is basically going to stall for 2 to 3 years.
It wasn't that long ago, Andrew, and we'll get on to the solutions and some other stuff shortly. We're just circling the problem. It wasn't that long ago, Andrew, that we had, it's in our lifetimes, we had a town clerk
Exactly. Yeah.
and a mayor and a planning process, which was basically to see that houses had services, were safe, roughly safe, and didn't create a big problem for the neighbourhood.
That's right. Nice and simple. And it worked.
And it worked wonderfully. We built a country. I tell this story. My father got married, took a year off work, bought some land. He, his brother, and his father-in-law cut the pine trees down on the property, pit sawed the logs by hand into 4x2s, and by hand, no machines, built a house, dug the well, put the sanitation in. I assume someone needed to come along and give him a consent to get a letterbox, but it wouldn't have occurred to my father to apply for consent. Built a wonderful, modest house for a family of five. Still there. Beautiful house, been extended, wouldn't leak. And he was not a builder or especially handy. His father-in-law was a builder. And he would have built it in today's terms for a song. That's in my lifetime.
It is, yes. A similar experience with my father.
And wouldn't you love to be a man that did that?
You'd be so proud. My
Yeah.
dad built his house, and 50 years later, he's still living in it.
Was he a builder?
No, he was a nuclear physicist.
Isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah, he did the wiring himself, the plumbing, did the building. There's the photos to prove it.
And it didn't leak.
No, the building consent was one page. Yeah, one page of drawings.
Can
And
you give out, can you give our very best to your dad and from the RCR family? That is such a cool story.
absolutely, yes.
What a wonderful man.
Yes.
I'm going to get on to the solutions. I want to think a little bit about the dynamics. How do you feel sitting in the council? Because you and I would be saying to the council, are you listening to these developers? This is why poor people can't afford houses. Actually, not just poor people now, virtually everyone. And they don't see any connection between the two things. Cause, my Richard Preble taught me this, cause and effect thinking in politics is entirely absent. And if you're a trained architect, engineer, scientist, trained in any field, actually outside of social sciences, cause and effect thinking is everything. But
Absolutely.
in politics, we just have effects to deal with and don't think, ah, what's causing this? Ah, it's that decision. You also, so you're sitting there at that level, they don't get it. You're sitting there in the council speaking up clearly. not being listened to, clearly. You're giving interviews like this, which are traitorous and not part of the club. You must be lonely.
The good news is that I went to the council fearing exactly that. The good news is I have got a few allies on council, and we've
Were
actually
they allies that you stood with or allies that you've met and joined?
allies that I've met and joined with,
Great.
and this was a surprise. And I think it's revealing that the tide is turning, that people are now speaking up. And what I've been doing, I've been getting so much positive feedback from people across New Zealand who are fighting back now. And this didn't exist 3 years ago. It is a change where people are seeing, yes, they can make a difference, and also they need to make a difference. And the message I give to a lot of people is that this is our best chance, but it's also our last chance, because if we don't actually get on and do it, the system is getting set into stone. So
How
be
are
brave.
people around New Zealand and within your district learning of this? How do you communicate with them?
It is spreading virally through word of mouth and things like RCR, and there's a lot of groups with their own focus points that are getting out a message that is consistent across all groups, that there are problems and there are solutions, and we can fix it if we have the numbers. And the biggest frustration I have is that all the groups with their own focuses aren't working well together.
Yes.
RCR can help bring those groups together. That's a good thing. But often people get bees in their bonnet about particular issues. And if that's not where the group is heading, they get frustrated and leave. Well,
Yes.
we actually have to prioritize things, work together.
And if someone's broadly in the right direction,
Yes.
they are part of our team. They don't have to be 100% with me or you. That's very exciting to hear.
Yes.
You also have, if I may say, a perpetual smile on your face.
Yeah.
A perpetual happy outlook and a soft voice. So you give off a warmth,
Thank you.
which I suspect is quite politically disarming to people.
The smile is to make people think I'm up to something.
And
Yeah,
you are.
most of the
But it's interesting because I can go, mostly I get angry and I go into the meeting angry and I give off that anger and it just sort of falls to custard, right? So you've got to go in there happy and cheerful and warm to people and then they think he's not such a bad guy. Well done. Is that cultivated or just your personality?
It is my personality, and when I'm dealing with council, because I have a reputation for fighting and being irritating to council staff. The fact is, the first interaction is positive and polite. The second interaction is positive and polite. The third interaction is positive and polite. The fourth one, gloves off. I've had enough by then. So I talk about the five D's of bureaucracy, which is delay, deny, defend, dismiss, and defer. And they'll mix up the order a bit, but they will try that. First up, that's not important. Or then you go again and they say, oh, no, you're wrong. Well, I'm an expert in the field. I know exactly what I'm doing. I wrote some of the rules. Don't tell me that I'm wrong. And then you go again and they're hoping most people will give up by that stage. Well, I'm not going to give up. And at that point, after three positive attempts, the fourth one is, right, you're in trouble now. I want to speak to
Yeah,
your boss.
interesting.
And they get unhappy.
But is that as a counsellor?
That is both as a counselor and as a professional doing a job in a specialist area such as building consents or resource consents, where the council staff know me, they know my reputation, they know I'm right, they still do that.
Because my understanding with the council was the chief executive will stand between you and talking to any staff,
Yeah.
which is amazing in of itself, right?
It is.
I
A lot
was a
of clients get
minister.
that.
I was a minister. I went across and used to go across and speak to the staff at my department and wander through the office. Out of a courtesy, I gave them the chief executive notice that I would be doing that. I was the first minister that had ever walked into the building, as far as anyone knew. And that was the Department of Internal Affairs, which is as old as New Zealand. And it was so unexpected that when I first suggested I do it, it was like crazy. And yet, to me, it's important to see and ask people, how's it going? If you're in a, if you own a business and run it, you talk to everyone. But you're a councillor and you're only allowed to talk to the chief executive. And of course, that again is part of their hold on power.
Correct.
You're wonderful, Andrew.
Thank you.
I know it's cost you a lot. Have you enjoyed and appreciated your time on council?
Well, I'll tell you another truth. It is the easiest job I've ever had. It's another thing that the councillors won't like you. With the public hearing. But the reality is, we get given a staff report 2 or 3 days before a meeting. The staff report has all the information the staff wants us to have, which most councillors think is all the information they need. That's not true. Secondly, it comes with a staff recommendation. So it's very, very easy to just go with the staff recommendation. And you turn up to the council meeting, you can ask some questions, then it might go into a debate where we get 2 minutes to debate. And then you have a vote, and it's done. You walk out of the meeting, finished. I've never walked out of a business meeting without having more work to do. And it is stress-free because you're not accountable for 3 years. You're not responsible because you can always blame the other councillors. And it is simply a cruise.
Well, being an MP is the laziest and easiest job I've ever had. But if you want to do it properly
The
and
difference wanting to
poke
do
the
it properly.
borax, it consumes you.
Correct.
I'm not sure, unless you want to be totally useless, Being a minister is lazy. Being a minister is the hardest job I've ever done. But I did follow in the role of local government, Nanaimo Hauta. And
Much easier.
there were some remarkable reports how easy she took it.
Yes.
But I agree with you from my observation of councils and my experience of parliament. Man, if you don't want to rock the boat, it is easy as. And even as a minister, if you just tick the boxes and agreed with the department, it is easy, cushy, disgustingly so. Again, you've got no skin in the particular game. It's not your money.
That's right.
How do we fix it, Andrew?
So there are three main problem areas. One is the structure of council, one is the finances, and one is the people. And we've touched on parts of the structure already, which is that there are effectively two councils. There's the councillors whom we elect, and then there's the council organisation run by the chief executive, whom we don't elect and we have no political control over. Most people think that the mayor has power. No, the mayor has a casting vote in the event of a tie, otherwise has no more power than I do, which isn't much. Having said that, it is a numbers game, and if you've got the numbers around the table for voting, you can actually have complete control of council.
Yes,
So
if you're prepared to accept responsibility.
yes. So what we need is good people working together as a team with the right range of skills and proper professional backgrounds who understand what is going on, working together to take that control so we can change the council organisation. The legal structure is that the councillors employ one person, who's the chief executive. The chief executive employs everyone else. And this is the break that stops councillors from walking into departments and actually getting stuff done. Now the chief executive is usually appointed for a 5-year term. We have a
Cleverly so.
3-year election term, and the Hamilton Slack councillors have just extended the chief executive's term for another 2 years into the next election cycle. So technically, that's removed the democratic power of the next term of councillors for most of their term, which
They
is
could still
horrible.
sack the chief executive, but they'd have
That's
to
right.
do a big payout.
Yes. And that is worth doing
I
to get
agree.
the change we need.
And you bring in a chief executive that is on board
Yes.
from outside the local government sector, probably,
Yes.
because a good chief executive can take over an entirely different business and still run it.
Yes. And the key then is to resource and support that chief executive,
And back them.
yeah, with people from outside the council who are experts in all of those 28 different business units.
And they're everywhere because the council is employing them as consultants.
Yeah.
Or these are people who are having to go through the co council process.
Yeah.
So there's
Now,
plenty of engineering firms, construction firms, developing firms who've got the expertise on the workings of council and how it should work. They know better how it should work than those that work there.
And in most councils, Auckland's possibly a bit too big for this, but certainly in Hamilton, most of those people will do it for free. They have the experience and they will do it for the public good.
Very good.
It's not a cost, it is getting the experts of all the people with grey hair, like me, or no hair, like you. And they'll get it done.
You may need a little nerdy 19-year-old called Big Balls who can come in with the AI and see where all the money's going in 3 minutes.
Get some help from Elon Musk and his team.
Absolutely. Gosh, it's extraordinary. I agree with you. You have to sack the chief executive with a new council and pay whatever it is, because otherwise you're going to be frustrated at every turn.
So that's the structure.
Yep.
The next part, the finances. So Hamilton is like most councils across the country, our rates will be doubling in 5 years. And that's not allowing for inflation. On top of that, our debt will be doubling in 5 years. And it's debt that will never get repaid, will always be a burden. And we really need to change the way we're dealing with that. There's a few parts to that. The one part I'll dwell on now is the fact that every council project costs twice as much as the private sector would do it for. And that is partly because of the staff not wanting to make decisions and take accountability for it. And I've worked as a consultant to councils on architecture projects, and I had to double my fee, not to fleece the public purse, but because there were so many extra meetings, I couldn't make any profit on the job. And if you can just get those decisions made, not needing committees, in the private sector, you form a committee by choosing the people with the skills you need so that you can get a decision made. In the public sector, the purpose of the committee is that no one person can be held accountable for it.
Yes.
It's about not making decisions. And that is crippling us as a country. I've seen the figures that New Zealand infrastructure costs four times the OECD average. If we could halve it, it would still be shit, but it would make this country viable. At the moment, it is not viable. It is too expensive.
While I was the Minister of Associate Minister of Education, I was involved in a building a school, and we did it as a public-private partnership. I said I'd like to attend some of the meetings. I went along to the meeting at the Ministry of Education, and there were 23 education officials at the meeting, and two or three from the construction company. We spent an hour debating how many plug outlets a classroom needed and reached no conclusion. And the private sector guys were openly just rolling their eyes at me. It's like, how the hell can we do this? Getting the people to stand, I think, I was told this before I went into politics, hanging around with experienced politicians. They said you only need on your team, you only need to look for one characteristic, not technical expertise, not oratory, not the ability to read reports and understand them. It was courage. So you're saying that half a dozen courageous people standing and getting onto that Hamilton Council could change the world.
Yes, because the concept of the team for local government is that you have a network outside council of the professional long-term community stalwarts to back you and give you the information and support and skilled advice that you need. So that when you get that staff report 2 days before a meeting, you can flick it out to your network and say, hey, give me a quick gut reaction on this. What am I missing? What questions do I need to ask?
Absolutely.
You can get that information, and so you can manage the council staff correctly rather than be managed by them.
Yes.
That change is easy. You don't need technical skills in all 28 different business units. You just need to have the courage to stand up to the staff, which is actually the role of councillors as governors. Not to take their word for it, but to check.
It's amazing because the power does reside around the board table.
It does, yes.
The board table's typically boring and mundane, where you wonder why you're there and what could be worse. With two or three brave souls and the majority on your side, you could change Hamilton's so fundamentally and so deeply, just those people, that it would be world news, that it would change New Zealand, and Hamilton would become the leading city in New Zealand.
That
That's
is
how, that is the prospect.
yes.
And people don't appreciate it.
No. So last Hamilton full council election, the voter turnout was 29%, which is a tragedy. And it's because the public has become so jaded with council that they don't think they're going to be listened anyway, so they aren't bothering to participate. If we can turn that around so that the public actually realizes they are being listened to, they are being taken seriously, and action actually happens, not just gets stalled in committees for years, then they will return to really wanting to be involved in the direction of the city. The council can lead that and really make it an attractive place to live, to do business, to play, to enjoy life.
Do your councillors, are they elected on a ward basis?
They are, yes.
So, in a ward, how many voters are there?
Right. So we have the Hamilton West Ward, the Hamilton East Ward, and the Mauro Ward. In Hamilton East and Hamilton West, there's about 60,000 on the voting roll of each of those.
Okay, and of those 60,000, they obviously elect more than one councillor.
Yes.
So do you what? You vote three times or four times?
Hamilton changed to the single transferable vote system,
Okay, I don't
which
understand
is
it.
a complicated mess.
Yes. You see, the reason I ask is I'm an old-time politician. I understand for society and for good governance, a 29% turnout is a tragedy. But to an old-time politician, it's an opportunity. Because my competitors are scrabbling for a fraction of the 29%. My goal would be to ignite the half the 70. And if I can ignite that, you've taken it.
This is correct. So if we can get just 10% more
Yes.
voter turnout, that's all we need
To
to
be in.
get in control and fix things.
Have
So
you
it
got a
is a challenge.
team running?
Yes.
I am so excited for you.
Yes.
That is so exciting. Because Hamilton's a beautiful place.
It is. One of New Zealand's best kept secrets, actually. It is a really nice place to live, an easy place to get around. It's close to Auckland, so we get everything that Auckland has in
Yes.
an hour and a half. And driving across Auckland can take an hour and a half by itself.
We had the extraordinary history of Hamilton, where the mayor resigned and became the ch chief executive, was it? And the chief executive stood and became the mayor. Did I got that right?
So you're talking about Michael Redman,
Yes, he was the chief
he was elected
executive.
as mayor.
Oh, okay.
He resigned to become the chief executive, which is a clear indication that the chief executive is actually the one with the position of power. The chief executive didn't stand or become mayor.
Okay. And that did the and then it was that ex-MP became the mayor.
Bob Simcock.
Bob Simcock. What a travesty that was. Conflict of interest, no. And then that was all around the V8 debacle. Well, Andrew. Listeners in Hamilton know what to do. Find out, Andrew, and follow him, and better yet, get involved because you can transform Hamilton, which is where you live, but also transform New Zealand. It starts at local councils.
It does.
And you have all the power in the world around that table if you have the numbers. For those of you listening in your area, do what Andrew does. And all you need is the courage of your convictions, and you will be a winner. Councils are extremely vulnerable. They're like this big plump chicken sitting there ready just to be taken, or like a lazy public company that's board's got fat and useless and is ripe for a takeover. And it's amazing how vulnerable they are to a takeover. Half a dozen good people with a team behind them change their whole future. Andrew, I'll be up in Hamilton. I've got family there. I'd love to catch up with you.
That would be great.
I'd also like you to come back on the show and report
Yes, certainly.
because we need to keep this going to inspire our listeners. You've inspired me. Put me down as a 100% supporter and anything you need, you've got.
Thank you, Robin.
There we have it, ladies and gentlemen. Gosh, we're blessed, aren't we, in New Zealand? We can complain a lot. And then you look at people like Andrew Bidder, councillor, out there doing it. Not in it for the fun or the money, but in it for the country. for his town. Yes, he has the knowledge, but most importantly, he has the courage. And you can always get the knowledge from others. It's that courage to sit there and not just take the easy route, but to take the right route and to come on here on RCR and report to us. It's gonna cost him. Well, he's a radical, he's a conspiracy theorist. No. Courage of his convictions. Send us a text 2057, email me, inbox@radleycheck.radio. If we had a dozen Andrew Bidders, we'd change the world.